Hello short film fans, and welcome back to In the Green Room with Nigel Morgan. After a bit of an extended hiatus, this is our first podcast of 2019, and I was fortunate enough to speak to writer-director Gage Oxley and producer Sean Carey of Oxygen Films about their new short film anthology, Wretched Things. Gage and Sean joined me from Leeds via Skype to provide some fascinating insights into their new project, which takes an unflinching look at social, economic, and psychological issues within the LGBT community, and spoke to me about how to keep producing boundary-pushing work within constant budgetary constraints. They were also kind enough to share some remarkable stories about the effect that their work has had on both audiences and collaborators. Listen and enjoy. So on the In the Green Room podcast, the first of 2019, we have two great minds from the amazing Oxygen Films, Gage Oxley, Sean Carey. Thank you for joining us on the podcast today.
Thank you very much for having us.
Yeah, that's it's been a fantastic opportunity being on the first one of the year. So yeah, thank you very much.
No worries at all. Thanks for joining us. So can you just start off by telling us a little bit about the origin of Oxygen Films and how you all came to be working together and what led to your first project?
Yeah, do you want me to take this one?
Yeah, you jump in on this one.
So we started Oxygen Films about 3.5 years ago now. We've made quite a considerable amount of films in that time, which is brilliant. We always kind of focus on things that we feel are really important for our crew. So we do a lot of LGBT content, a lot of films on mental health, and a lot of very challenging content because as a non-profit community interest company, we find that a lot of the conversations that we have and want to inspire with film are those that are a bit more challenging. We started out with a feature film called The Pursuit of Normality, which we didn't kind of fully finish. We'd started it and hopefully maybe one day that might come back around. And then we came with This World We Live In, which you saw and reviewed and stuff, which was fantastic. So from there, it's just kind of got bigger and better. We've challenged ourselves more, we've pushed our cast and crew considerably more. Earlier this year we had the premiere of a new feature film, Wretched Things, Leicester Square in London at the View Cinema, which was an absolutely incredible experience for us. We have always tried to kind of make sure our films get out to as many people as possible, and to have it on such a platform was huge for us. So yeah, we're getting bigger and better, hopefully, and it's a fantastic journey.
Fantastic. One of the things that I've kind of picked up on as I've been watching new projects come out of Oxygen Films is that there's always a healthy dose of ambition there, and that amazingly it hasn't actually outstripped your sort of logistical and technical capability. So if we have a look at This World We Live In, for example, so you know, you're talking about a short film which has incredible lighting, incredible cinematography, you've got multiple locations, multiple people. It's quite a big sort of logistical task for a film that short. So how is it that you've been able to kind of marry the constraints that come along with short film but also wanting to push the boundaries as much as you can?
Well, I think for me, it's certainly just through the experience and dedication of the crew. So we're a non-profit organisation, so everybody works in our films for free. That's actors, crew, we source our own equipment. So a lot of it is through in-kind sponsorships and stuff, which is how we've managed to get past a lot of logistical things such as locations, such as the club scene in This World We Live In. But honestly, I feel like the constraints and stuff, they're not an issue when you've got such a dedicated crew, and you can just see the crew improve as we go on and as we make more films. The reason they do become more ambitious is because the crew are becoming more ambitious in what they're able to do and how much they're able to contribute, which is really exciting, and it's just really fascinating and enjoyable to watch.
Yeah. And in a similar vein as well, like you mentioned, like the fact that a lot of our stuff we do get for free, and there are those constraints there that kind of push us even more. It's like when someone tells you can't do something, you just want to do it more and more. For us, it was very much like we've been told that, you know, we're not going to get a budget, we're not going to get money to make the stuff that we want. but we want to challenge ourselves and not let any kind of hurdle not make us jump. So yeah, I think that was quite a it's been fun, and we obviously would like more money. If anyone has any, please send it our way. But you know, yeah, as Sian says, the crew is fantastic.
They just shoved themselves completely in. For example, with Pulse, that was incredible, and it was an absolute logistical nightmare because we had the location for such a short amount of time. But I mean, Michael was fantastic because he did rehearsals with the actors. He was our DP.
Yeah.
He did rehearsals with the actors in London. So they were so sure of their blocking and marking that when we got to the location, it just wasn't an issue. And we were really able to focus on performance and get the best one. So how many takes did we do with that?
It was 13 in the end. 13, because it was a one continuous take film. And we only had 3.5 hours to get the shot that we needed. We'd had a backup actually, in case we didn't get the one shot. We had like a, if we were getting down to like half an hour left and we still hadn't got it, we'd had places we could put hide cuts in. Thankfully, we didn't have to do that. But it was quite down to the wire.
So we had crew meetings and stuff, and the crew just not even seeing the location. We had one recce, and then all of a sudden they came in and they just had to be on it like that. The SAs had never, the supporting artists had never seen the location. They just came in, and all of a sudden we were having to manage them as well, and that was up to about 50 people. So it was really, really challenging, but I think that was one that I certainly feel a lot of pride with, because everybody just came together, and despite it being such a very short process to get everything done, it just worked and it flowed so well.
Right. So what was it that prompted you to go in the direction of doing something in sort of like one continuous shot?
For us, it was, again, that sense of challenge. With everything we do, we want to consistently grow, as well as we want to challenge our actors to be able to grow, because a one continuous take film doesn't only challenge technically in terms of having to get certain cameras or certain shots that you can't really get if you're doing it in one take. But equally wanted to challenge our actors because it's very much a theatrical piece rather than a film piece. Obviously, you've still got to be aware of the camera, but a lot of it is very much you've got one time to get this right. Yeah. So, yeah, we constantly wanted to challenge ourselves, and the one continuous take thing sounded like a good step up from this world we live in. And there's so many brilliant one-take films. I mean, Victoria, which is such a fantastic feature, shot in Berlin. It's just, yeah, we kind of wanted to do something like that. Obviously, it's 5 minutes long, which is a lot easier than 2 hours. But who knows what the next... what's around the corner?
So, yeah. And obviously all these challenges get heaped on the shoulders of the producer, so... So you find you're always kept on your toes with Gage's ideas.
Honestly, there's so many times when he's pitched me ideas and I'm just like, how are we going to manage this? But I suppose it's just our responsibility to come together and figure out how to do it. So usually I'll never just like shut down an idea. Mm-hmm. Usually, I mean, there's a lot of persuading that goes into it, but I mean, he can get me on board quite easily. And then it's not a case of we can't do this. It's a case of how can we do this? So we've just got to really smash it and make sure that we do it the best that we can and do it the justice that your vision deserves.
Oh, well, I mean, the thing is as well, it is a very much collaborative process as well. Like between, as Sian mentioned, all of our cast and crew are working completely voluntarily, and that isn't something that we just expect. So for us, it is very much a sense of everyone does come together, we get everyone's ideas on board, so then it kind of does take a lot of the pressure off some of us. So it's not just my idea of everyone having to figure it out, and it's not just on your shoulders as well. So yeah. And obviously it makes it a lot more of an experience for everyone, because they can see visibly their work on screen, they can see their ideas put into practice, and that's kind of the best thing, I think, for everyone.
That's great. So is it the same crew that you've worked with across all of the projects?
Pretty much, yeah. We've got, I mean, Sian's been a producer on every single one now.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, and same with Beth, who's our production manager. We've got then kind of a range of different people who come in and out of certain positions throughout the film. So we had Michael, who was the director of photography on Pulse, Matt Tingle, who was the director of photography on This Where We're Living and on Wretched Things Chapters 1 and 2, and then Rose McLaughlin, who is the director of photography on our new film that's coming out not so soon. I mean, we kind of work with loads of different artists and creatives because at the same time, we want to get different visions and different ideas. But as Sean mentioned, the people who have stuck with us have seen, you know, they've grown in their confidence in their role and stuff. So they've been able to do a lot of different things.
And it's really exciting because we're getting more people reaching out saying, we've heard about the films that you do and kind of please be a part of your crew, which is so lovely because especially when everybody's working voluntarily, you feel almost like it's quite bad that you're having to ask people to work for free because, I mean, if we had it our way, we wouldn't have to, but we just don't have the financing. But the fact that people are coming saying, I want to work for free just to work with you, it's so humbling. And, you know, we couldn't ask for a better crew, really, and the amount of engagement that we've got with that.
I mean, that's got to really kind of put things in perspective for you when people are approaching you from that place of, I love the work you do and I want to be a part of that. I'm sure that does fuel the passions a bit, and that's fantastic. So what was it that caused you to address the issues that you have addressed in the films that you've done, This World We Live In, for example? You know, there's issues of masculinity almost being a burden that men have to carry, and the whole concept of having a veneer to cover up who you actually are as opposed to who you think society wants to see. What kind of led you to address issues like that?
I think for us, the issues that we tackle within our films are things that we do discover as part of the LGBT community. You know, there's thankfully now a lot more films coming out that are with LGBTQ themes, which are fantastic. But there's still kind of that grittiness that I think an independent film has that can get away with looking at some of the more challenging and niche aspects or challenges that the community faces. So masculinity being one of them, and chemsex, which we looked at with This World We Live In, and the kind of the drug abuse and pain that a young gay man can go through with new technology. That's the type of thing that I don't think, you know, a Universal picture, for example, might be able to get away with or get financed. So we feel that kind of responsibility to represent a lot of the issues that people face, that we know people in these situations. So with Wretched Things, we saw the first chapter looks at a lot of the kind of Me Too and Time's Up movement and the exploitative nature of some people in power for people in our industry. A lot of our actors have actually gone through things that character has gone through. With the second one, it looks at webcam modelling and online sex work, and that's something that is really, really growing, and people are, you know, people becoming more desperate to get money and desperate to get Instagram followers or whatever it is. That's something that we're finding as well, and the issues that we think are important for our generation and for our community, we want to kind of address that, because when I was growing up, I didn't have any of that type of content on our screens. And it feels like that's if I can do anything at all, that's what I want to do, is to create more stories for people to see. Because I think film is such a powerful tool, and having that opportunity to create something that people are going to talk about and people are going to debate, because I 100% know and love the fact that people don't like our films, because that in itself is a conversation, it's a discussion. And if people are discussing some of these important topics or know more about or feel more informed about these topics, then for me, that's our job done. That's all we want.
I feel like for me as well, I mean, even back in the times of ancient Greece, it was the poets that were banned from the Republic. It's all about art, and the idea that art has the power to change people's perspectives and move people. And I feel like film is such a powerful medium, and if we can incite change or make people think about a certain topic through our films, then that's our job done. Like Gage said, it's just there's this overwhelming amount of pride, especially when people message us saying, "Oh, we saw your film and it's helped us to be able to come out to our parents." Like that's so lovely, and it really. It just really makes you cry a little bit.
I guess for you as well, Sean, your process is actually quite internal. Like, you know, you it's all the logistics, it's all kind of there. And on the filming days, you don't often realise that someone's actually going to watch your work. And at the end of it, having that actual real-life person linked to one of the numbers of the view counts saying, this has changed my life, is absolutely, it's indescribable. It's not something that I ever thought would happen.
It's just overwhelming.
Yeah, completely overwhelming. Completely.
Amazing. It kind of answered my next question, actually. I was going to say, have you had any direct experiences of your films having reached somebody and provoked a response? But yeah, you got me on that one. So okay, so that's fantastic. So, you know, if what you do is able to reach people in that way and it's actually started to provoke conversation, how much of that has then played a part in the projects that you decide to pursue next?
In a way, it's that kind of when someone tells you not to do something, you do it. So we had a few reviews where, for example, this where we live in, we were told that we had too many shower scenes for a 20-minute film. We had two shower scenes in a 20-minute film. And so with Wretched Things, we put 5 in because we thought that's something that, you know, obviously is something that affected this particular person. We wanted to make sure that we had that voice shown. But I mean, in terms of the language and the kind of the conversations we're getting from people, it is very much it is more challenging. It's becoming more challenging. I think this world we live in is, when we look back at this world we live in, that seems quite a tame project compared to Wretched Things. And I think what we are aiming to do is build up an audience who are committed to the content that we create, and know the type of content and know what they're getting into, but equally bringing in new people, because I think what our films can do is bring in certain demographics and certain people who think it's going to be something else, and then completely switch it and say, well, actually no, this is the issue. So
I completely agree. I mean, you'll notice a lot in our marketing material that it can seem a little bit sexy, verging on like almost erotic, and then if you actually go in and watch some of the film's more sexual scenes, you'll see that it's not that at all. It's actually touching on something that's a lot more important, and this kind of feeling of loneliness. And I feel like that if we can trick audiences into coming in thinking that they're going to see a very sexy film, and then they're going to walk out thinking that is not at all what I expected, and now I'm questioning things about the film, I'm questioning things about myself, then that's our job done.
Yeah. I mean, it's an interesting one, actually, because there was a lot of very striking imagery when in Wretched Things, that focused on the body. So normally, especially with film, if the focus is going to be on the body, it's going to be promoting something, the sexuality of a particular person, as opposed to viewing through the prism of sexuality someone's isolation, or as you said, someone's loneliness or their insecurity. And I can't really think of many other instances where someone's actually used sexuality in that way. So was there a particular film that you watched, or a filmmaker's work that that made you think, actually, maybe we can view this concept through a different prism?
That's interesting. I'm really glad you picked up on that, actually, because I that's exactly what we're going for, and I don't think, for me, there wasn't any inspiration in terms of directors or content that I'd seen that has done that like I wanted it to be done. Because for me, I think it was the inspiration of the psychology behind it, the psychology of our audiences. We know that we want to make our audiences feel something and make our audiences start thinking more about just the content that is on the screen. Because I think now films, and especially a lot of LGBT films, can be quite a passive watch, more than a challenging watch. And there's not many, you know, LGBT thrillers or LGBT horrors and stuff like that. So we wanted to really make our audience think, this is not something typical. And I think with those scenes which do focus on sexuality and do focus on the body and things like that, it's done in a way where it's designed to arouse in a certain way, but then actually strips it all back, and it shows that vulnerability. Because I think when someone is in that frame of mind, that's when as an audience, we are our most insecure and most vulnerable. And having those questions then is kind of hopefully more impactful. And that's what we've started to see. We've started to see a lot of people who really love that kind of, oh, wow, this is very challenging and very twisted and very out there. And a lot of people who do feel kind of very much, okay, this is too uncomfortable. which is...
Yeah. I mean, you do kind of run the risk of somebody reacting in that way. It's like, this isn't what I came to see, or I'm not comfortable watching this and that kind of thing. Knowing that, do you ever have a moment of pause when you're actually deciding which stories to tell or deciding whether or not to write a particular scene? Or do you feel it's a process that someone has to go through in order to make a particular issue more visible?
I'll let you answer that.
Okay.
It's more focused on the kind of writing aspect.
So. I think for me, to a certain extent, no, because when I'm writing, I don't typically write for the audience. It is very much, I write it knowing that someone will like it or someone will find what I meaning from it, and someone will find that kind of element of, okay, this represents me, this works with me. And I think the type of content we make is very much Marmite. People will love it and people will hate it. And that's exactly what we want. I think that reaction in the middle of, it was all right, it was decent, that's not what we want. I think it's such an extreme, we create such extreme films that require such extreme reactions. When we're writing, it is very much, as I say, a collaborative process where we are all pulling into this complete idea of this is what we're going to put out, and if people don't like it, then that is more than fine, but we're making this for the people who will find something in it, or we're making this for the people who will discuss what this is about, because those are the people that we feel that need to see this work, rather than the people who think, oh, it was okay.
There was a bit of freedom, wasn't there, in the kind of the writing process. I mean, for example, with Wretched Things, we weren't entirely sure where we were going to get Bruce Herbling-Earle, who's an amazing actor who we worked with on The Pursuit, and we really wanted him, and we were just worried about scheduling conflicts, and we weren't sure where we were going to get him, and then we did, and we just didn't have a part written for him. And so you approached him with, I think it was about 5 different alternative storylines, and said, which one do you really want to see on the screen? And it was actually almost an improvised process between Bruce and Adam, who played Louis in Wretched Things, and they created that story, and we just filmed the scene without a script, and that was incredible. So it's not just Oxygen's view as to what we want to see on screen, it's the actors as well, like everyone, it's such a collaborative process.
Yeah.
And it's just very exciting.
And actually on that day when we did that scene, when no one knew what on earth was going to happen, it was I think one of the most challenging scenes of the film. It's the one, I don't want to kind of spoil it for audiences, I don't know if you know the one, that I mean, it's the one where in chapter 3 where he goes into the house to buy the boxes. That was a completely improvised scene that was done there and then in a free afternoon, and that was a fantastic opportunity to work with 2 very talented actors, Adam Ayadi and Bruce Herbling-Earle, in a sense of just do what you want. and it worked really, really well. And I think that kind of process allows a more divisive story as well, because it's not just one person saying, let's do this, let's read what's on my script. It is actually, no, you rewrite the script. It's a living thing that you can make your own. Within reason, of course. And then let's build on it from there. And I think that makes it a more breathing thing. It's not just one person's visions, it's a vision of a collaborative team.
And it's brilliant as well, because obviously these actors are working for free, and I mean, that's always going to be an issue in the industry. People shouldn't have to work for free, but unfortunately it's just something that we have to do, because we're never going to get financing otherwise. And these actors working without fee, it was very important to us that they were very comfortable in these roles and that they were getting out what they wanted to. So there were certain things that actors wanted to do, weren't there? Like Bruce wanted to smoke in one scene. So we wrote a scene for him where he was able to do that. So it's very exciting because we're able to collaborate with actors and see if we can help them as much as they're helping us by creating these films, because actors do want more challenging content now, and they want to be seen as like very capable and very versatile. So it's very good when we can sort of help each other in that sense, which I think is really important as well, because especially when actors are working for free, it's just important to give in as much as they're giving you.
So just to that point, actually, so Sean, for you specifically, if you're trying to find actors, because obviously Gage will come up with an idea or a story or a script where the actors will have to go to some pretty difficult places, how do you as a producer find actors that are likely to go to those places? And then Gage, how do you as a director get them there?
Well, actually, casting was very collaborative in Wretched Things. I feel like the time when I really, really focused in on casting was This World We Live In, which was very difficult because we weren't as established then. Like I say, we're getting to a point now where people are actually approaching us wanting to do work with us, which is very, very exciting. But for This World We Live in particular, that was incredibly difficult because we weren't as established. We had done The Pursuit of Normality, but the only thing we had out for that was a trailer, and that's not yet been released or anything yet. So having to approach people and ask them to do those kind of things is very difficult. But all you've got to do is kind of come from a place of, we understand how difficult this will be, but this is the reason why we're doing it. So it's not a case of, oh, this will include you know, for example, nudity from the back. You've just got to kind of explain to them the reason why we're doing this. And a lot of actors will get in on that. If they can see the reasoning behind why something needs to be shot a certain way or why a certain action needs to be done, it lets them go on as this character's journey. So it's quite collaborative in that respect, because a lot of the time they do want to be speaking to the director about the kind of story elements, because they don't want to be putting themselves out for a film that isn't going to see the light of day, especially when it's when it is considered quite graphic in terms of the stuff that we do. But again, it's not for a gratuitous reason. It's for the reasoning of, we want to make these gritty films that are going to make people and make the audiences question what's going on the screen. So it's just very important that we're very open and those conversations are there from the beginning about the reasoning why we need certain scenes done a certain way, which I think is incredibly important to do.
Yeah. And then from the director's perspective, of once you've finally managed to get someone who's, you know, really excited about being on board and having that that connection there, I think connection is really important, because as a director, I really think that kind of almost like spiritual connection between them is like so important, to be able to be like, this is why you need to trust me and this is why I need to trust you, because there is a certain element of trust from both parts, I think, and with every single film we've done, we've got a cast who is so capable and so you know, really bring their all to the roles that we've got. But in terms of the actual on set, I think the main thing is making sure that they know that we know how sensitive this is and how important their feelings and how their comfort levels are, because, you know, they are literally bearing all, and it is very much a challenging role, and we don't want to ask them to do anything that they're not comfortable with, and equally we want them to understand why. So yeah, from a director, it is very much a case of having that connection with them and having that conversation. And with Wretched Things, I think that was the one where we finally realised, actually, the conversation just needs to be really blunt, like, rather than beating around the bush about saying certain things, you know, sit nicely and safely, is actually just being, do you know what, let's just strip it back and say actually what it is you need to be doing. Yeah. Because I think that conversation, that openness is so critical on a film, which is very much a challenging thing to shoot as much as it is a challenging thing to watch. I think that's important.
And what's fantastic as well is usually after an actor's worked with us, they do tend to want to come back for more, which is very exciting. Like, we worked with Jack on This World We Live In, and we've also worked on him now with for Wretched Things and for Tog, which is yet to be released. So it's brilliant building up that relationship. Dale Mooney as well, he was on Pulse and now he's on Wretched Things. Mm-hmm. It's brilliant that they want to come back and they want to continue working with us. And it's nice building up that relationship as well, because it puts us in a better position to see what they want to do and how they want to challenge themselves. And sometimes that can even influence story to an extent, can't it? So that's really exciting. And it's nice having that kind of little unit. And it seems very familial in a sense, which is really, really lovely. And it just creates a lovely atmosphere on set.
Right, okay, that's fantastic. Yeah, because I was actually going to say, you know, with especially in the case of Jack Parr, you have had a few people return to the fold for additional projects. So can you talk to us a little bit about some of the projects that are in the pipeline at the moment?
Yeah, so obviously we've got Wretched Things, which premiered earlier this year. We're going on with the distribution of that, which is really great and is going quite well. So we're very excited about that. Chapter one of Wretched Things, so just to kind of break down the structure of it, it's split up into three distinct chapters, but it can be watched as one continuous feature. But the first chapter, which is about 10 minutes long, will be released very, very soon. So for any listeners who are keen to see what that is about, then hopefully there'll be a link somewhere that they can reach soon. So with Wretched Things, we're going to be pushing that out. We worked on a film again with Jack Parr last year in October called Tog. This is the first film, actually, as Auction Films that we haven't written, which is a very interesting... that, again, another challenge for us, because, you know, we didn't have that kind of connection as much to the story and the script and the but still we found it a really, really brilliant piece and something we're super excited to release very, very soon. And then in terms of the next stuff, I think for the very first time in about 5 years, we don't actually have an idea of what we're doing next, which is really nice, actually, because of all of the films we've done before, when we're in post-production of one film, we're also in pre-production of another. And this is the very first time when we're actually in a post-production place on two different films with nothing in pre. And, you know, it's quite nice because we're seeing what's out there. We're, like, literally looking outside for once. And we're seeing what is in the world. And we are now five films into our LGBT series called The Odyssey, which was there to commemorate the 50th anniversary of the partial decriminalisation of homosexuality in the UK in 2017. And that is something that I think we're kind of coming to a close now. So it's quite exciting that we have the full the full array of stories and challenges and issues that we find now in the world. You know, the world is a very scary and strange place at the moment, I think. And, you know, there's a lot of kind of things happening in our world which we are finding we need to fight more for. I think out of everything, all of this kind of discomfort in the outside world is leading to more punchy art. I think especially in America with the current president, it is kind of leading to a more fight about in art and a more kind of passion in a lot of things. So I think we're hoping that might inspire us to create something again a little bit more a little bit more punchy. But with our future, we constantly want to challenge ourselves even more. We know we've got places to grow and places to go as well. So yeah.
Okay. So how did you find it with Tog, did you say it was called? How did you find it directing a script that you hadn't written?
It was interesting. I mean, it was a two-day shoot, so it was very much intense, like, let's just get through this weekend and it'll be fine. And it was genuinely one of my favourite on-set experiences, actually. Jack Parr returns in our film, so he plays this... vulnerable character called Tom. Again, it's kind of similar to Wretched Things Chapter 1 in that he's a model who's at the arms of an exploitative photographer, but it goes in a very, very different direction. So for me, it was an interesting challenge to connect with a character that wasn't something that I created as such. But, you know, working with Jack again, this is our fifth film now that we've worked on together. It felt very much like a, you know, we have that trust and we have that bond and connection there where I know exactly what he can do and he knows exactly what I can do. And it's that kind of mutual collaboration there where it was perfect. And again, our crew, a lot of them came back from Wretched Things onto Tog. even though it was a much shorter, smaller project, it kind of felt a bit like a breeze after Wretched Things, which was a month long. So yeah, for that, it was a different challenge again, but yeah, we'll soon see how that that comes out. So I work for the Leeds International Film Festival, which is it's the second largest film festival in the UK outside of London. With my work there as a freelancer, we got an opportunity to assist with the PR and marketing for the the screening in Leeds for Everyman, and it was a fantastic opportunity to actually be able to see the other side of it, because we always distribute our films and it's our films, we know exactly what it is, so we know exactly what we're doing, whereas this is very much like this is a big film, this is something that we have to do. But I mean, 120 BPM is such a phenomenal LGBT film, and to be able to have any part in such a brilliant film, and seeing, you know, we did some crazy stuff for that. We went on a protest with like the t-shirts with like the
silence equals death,
that's it, with the pink triangles. It was just a mad mad few months where it was doing that kind of PR and promotion for a film that wasn't ours, and again that was quite a challenge for us too.
Interesting. So just kind of sticking with marketing and promotion for a moment, so with the turnover of projects that that you've had to instigate over the past 5 years, what has sort of been your main sort of strategy in terms of making sure they get seen and that as wide an audience knows about them as possible?
Film Freeway is our complete brand.
Yeah.
I absolutely adore it. We just, like, we look at any festival that could, like, remotely feel would help promote the film, and we just submit. It's a very kind of rapid process. We just have to look through. We have to really, zone in on those different filters, seeing which festivals would suit the films and which ones we've got more chance of getting into, and just really hammering it in. In some cases, it's a case of emailing, certain festivals and saying, look, we've got this amazing film that we're super proud of. Being done by such a young crew as well. And, unfortunately, with zero budget, is it possible that you might consider a fee waiver or a discount? And it's getting it seen through there. And obviously, we've got a lot of stuff posted online as well. I feel like the online community is a really, really good way of promoting our films as well. And also, it's nice because it's not just about getting a film into a festival. It's about people and audiences being able to see the film and it having an effect on them. So, you know, it doesn't really matter to us how many awards we get, even though we've got a fair number, particularly you. That doesn't matter. It just matters that we've influenced that one person in the comments section of YouTube that's felt like this film's made an impact. So definitely the online community is certainly a huge part of our distribution.
It's getting a lot easier now as well. I think when it started off, when we didn't have that kind of fan base or our likes on Facebook that we could just put out to. I mean, now, for example, This Where We Live In is, I think, about to hit 500,000 on YouTube, which is great, and that's had a really great festival circuit around the world that we can now go to those festivals and be like, if you really like this one, you might also like something else we've done. Pulse has reached over 3 million, so it's kind of getting to a point now where, as Jan mentioned, we've got a collective online who knows and trusts the content that we make, and so being able to have that audience there is just so nice, to be able to say, watch this, we think you might like it if you've liked some of the other stuff that we've done. I think it is all about getting it out to people, and with the support of people like you as well, who are fantastic and phenomenal for independent filmmakers and artists and stuff, it's that makes all the difference for us, so thank you.
Thank you. I think all the thanks goes to people like yourself who put yourselves out there, that gather the resources together and get these stories told. And, you know, if any one platform is able to single out something that really stands out, I think that's the best thing for the medium, it's the best thing for the community that spawned that art as well. You know, it's one of the things that has kind of come for me just watching short film, is that there's so much content out there, being able to kind of point people in the direction of the medium is difficult just because there's so much of it. And it's difficult to then say, oh, watch this short film, even if it's a great one, just watch this short film, you'll really enjoy it. It is very, very hard. So the more that you kind of get into short film, the more you realise what an essential part of it marketing is. And building an audience around your work is. So that's the whole reason Cameo Launch exists at all, is because you do need to be able to delineate between something that a wide audience is going to be interested in and something that's going to be niche and something that's going to be from this community but might have a bit of a wider appeal and so on and so forth. So keep doing what you're doing. We'll keep talking about it because it's fantastic. You know, you want to be able to get behind people that are constantly producing work as tirelessly as possible, and it can be very, very difficult, especially when, you know, when there's no money.
Yeah, yeah. As much as we hate to say it, money is the be-all and end-all of independent filmmaking. But, I mean, nothing, that won't stop us. We would make a film on nothing. We have made films on nothing, so we're gonna carry on.
And an interesting thing about wretched films, actually, because one of the conversations I've been having with people recently is that the associations people generally tend to make with short film, when you're actually making short films, is with feature film. You know, you tend to structure it in the same way, you tend to try and promote it in the same way. But actually, it's not consumed in the same way. With a feature film, you know, you'll build your day around it or your evening around it. It's like, oh yeah, such and such has just come out. Or do you want to get a bite to eat beforehand or a couple of drinks or whatever? And you'll build a whole thing around it. With a short film, you'll find it, consume it, and then get on with your day. Basically, you won't build anything around that. And in that way, it's more similar to music than it is to feature film. And, you know, we've been discussing for a while that actually one of the things people might consider is instead of doing one feature film, do three or do five and put it out almost like an album. And without having had that direct conversation with you, Wretched Things came along.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much what you've done, because you're releasing each chapter as individual films. So what kind of led you to then pursue that as a strategy?
Well, it wasn't actually supposed to be a feature when we first came up with the idea. It was supposed to be three short films, but they were supposed to be very, very short, to make a short film within itself. And then we inadvertently made a feature, which was quite difficult in terms of promotion and stuff. But equally, I mean, to get Leicester Square was so fantastic. And yeah, I think that how you compared it to albums is very exciting. And certainly you could argue that Odyssey for us is our album, really, a sort of celebration of that partial decriminalisation. And I just think that it's very important to get these stories told. So if it's surrounding the kind of same LGBT narrative, then they all are packaged together in under that Odyssey umbrella. That works really, really nicely for us, and that can help us within our promotion.
Yeah. And as well, I love that. I love that analogy of an album. Actually, I'm so definitely good. I'm definitely taking
can
that.
Can we steal it?
but I mean, like, for example, an album, you know, there's some albums that come out that, you know, you love every single song on it. There's some albums that you think, there's a hit on there, but the rest are, you know, maybe we'll skip past them. But I mean, for example, with Wretched Things, the fact that there is the first chapter, which is about 10 minutes that you can watch, the second 18, the third 52, it is, if you want to watch one of them, if you've only got a 10-minute free slot between, you know, whatever, if you're on a bus and you've got 10 minutes to watch a film, then you can put that one on, or you can watch them all in one go. It's very much like a Lego piece of, like, constructing this film however you want it to be immersed. And I think audiences are so, you know, audiences are really changing now in terms of how they consume media and how we watch media, you know. And so quickly as well, we don't watch short films, or, you know, in a traditional package at festivals as such anymore. Of course, some of us do, but most of our audience are watching them on YouTube or on a mobile device in bed. It's, you know, it's not like a sit down, let's watch a film anymore. And I think that's something that we're trying to bring in, because I think a lot of our films, as much as we say they're uncomfortable to watch and as much and challenging, they are actually still quite accessible. And so for us, it is making sure that however people decide to watch it, whether it's on at the back of a bus on a mobile phone or on a massive screen at Leicester Square, it's something that people can do. And I love that thing of an album. We just need like a Spotify for short filmmakers now, don't we? I think that's exactly what we've hoped to do, and fingers crossed that's going to come out.
Yeah. I mean, because when you do, and I think inadvertently that's what you've been doing anyway.
Yeah.
When you kind of approach it from that perspective, it actually makes it easier to market, because you can then market a collection of films under the title of the artist.
Yeah.
Whether it be the writer or the director. And you can, in the same way, market it as being from a particular label as well. And it just makes it that much more exciting, you know, it gives people a particular hook to then follow any given person's work and just see what that person's going to come out with next. And it makes the next project easier to promote if the previous one has been successful in that same model. And it kind of seems that you kind of organically found that without trying to actually consciously do it, which I found quite interesting. So with Wretched Things, then, what has the reaction to that been generally? I mean, obviously, you had the premiere in Leicester Square, which was just a fantastic event. And outside of that, or off the back of that, and to anyone that might have been able to catch it online or any additional screenings, what has the response been to it?
So far, we haven't had that many screenings of it, so it is still quite an exclusive watch for those who have seen it. But so far, so good. I mean, I think the discussions and debates I've managed to get into with certain people has shown that what we set out to do, we've been successful at it, regardless of whether or not people have liked it. I think what we've set out to do in terms of making people think and making people talk about some of the issues that before watching the film they would never have spoken about, I think the film has acted very much as like an icebreaker for opening up future conversations, and so far we have seen that. Our cast and crew who were at the Leicester Square premiere last month, they have all loved it, thankfully, which is a huge relief. I think they all, I think they're now seeing that their hard work has really come across well on screen, and should be as proud as I am as of them as well. So, so far so good. I'm hoping to get more and more feedback on Chapter 1, especially coming out very soon online. I think getting it out there to the general audience other than press and reviewers and stuff. But yeah, reviewers have all been very, very happy with it, which is a relief. There's been, again, as I said, just really, really interesting discussions about it. Even between cast and crew, actually, we've opened up conversations that we didn't really necessarily even have on set that has now come across from the premiere. So yeah, I think that's been interesting. I don't know what your reaction is.
Oh no, it was quite interesting as well, because we had crew members that hadn't seen certain scenes, maybe just because they weren't available that day, or for example, with the one between Adam and Bruce, that was done on a complete minimal set, skeleton crew. It was about, what, four of us, five of us?
I wouldn't even say that. I think by the end of it, it was just me and you.
Oh, goodness. It was an absolute nightmare. So half the crew didn't know what to expect when that scene came on, and just seeing their reactions. I mean, it was shocking. I was there when we were filming, and I was gagging in the cinema during the pre-screening, because I just, it felt so real, and it just felt so ugly. There was that moment where I was just like, what have we made? and then obviously I've realised over time that these things do happen, and these stories need to get out there. And yeah, it's been really interesting to see crew's reactions and see what they think, but also how proud they are, because there might be certain things that they think, oh my goodness, I can't believe we've gone and made this. But overwhelmingly, it just seems that their overall view of the film is, but this story needs to be told. So that's very, very exciting.
Yeah. The rest of the film as well will be, and Chapter 1 will be entering into festivals, hopefully going around the world, travelling and doing the festival circuits. Eventually they'll all come online, because I think for us it is all about accessibility. We don't want to restrict anyone from having to see the film. Sooner or later. But if anyone is wanting to catch up on the film or know more about it, our social media is the best place to go and see if or when it's available.
Great. Can you just let anyone know what your Twitter handles are or any links to contact you directly, just to keep up with what you're doing and see when the next project's coming out?
Yeah, definitely. So our Twitter is at Oxygen Film, and so is our Instagram. If anyone wants to follow us there, that'd be great. And our Facebook is just at Oxygen Films. And we've got a website as well, which is oxygenfilms.co.uk.
You can find a lot of emails on that as well. So if you do want to reach out to us, all our emails are there.
Fantastic. Sean, Gage, thank you so much for joining us. It's been absolutely fantastic to speak to you. We look forward to the initial release and the subsequent projects as well. Having seen Wretched Things, I can vouch for it as a fantastic piece of work.
Oh, thank you, Nigel.
Thank you very much for having us.
It was lovely to chat to you as well. Thank you.
Gage Oxley and Sean Carey of Oxygen Films. Well, that's all we have time for in this edition of In the Green Room. You can see more work from Oxygen Films at their website, oxygenfilms.co.uk, as well as on their Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram pages using the /Oxygen Films. You can also catch Chapter 1 of Wretched Things on Amazon Prime Video, as well as the original soundtrack on Amazon Music, Apple Music, and Spotify. Our review of all three chapters will be available in the next week, and you can get a heads up on future podcasts and reviews by following us on Facebook, Twitter, and SoundCloud using the handle at Cameo Launch. Thanks for joining us, and we look forward to bringing you more great work from more outstanding filmmakers. Until next time, we look forward to seeing you back in the green room. Take care.